Welcome to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere.
Welcome to the Center of Everywhere, episode 12. I'm Kelly Ash, research associate at the Center for Rural Policy and Development. So just what is the Association of Minnesota Counties? Our president and CEO, Julie Tesh, talks with AMC's executive director, Julie Ring, about the association that supports and advocates for Minnesota's 87 counties. This year of COVID has been especially challenging for county governments. Julie discusses the difficult issues counties have faced and are still dealing with in terms of public health and human services. But it's not all bad, as she discusses how this time has also spurred a revolution in how our counties deliver services and how these changes may stick around once the pandemic has passed.
Today, we are honored to have Julie Ring as our guest. Julie is the Executive Director of the Association of Minnesota Counties. Welcome, Julie.
Thanks, Julie. It's great to be here.
So for those listeners that we have, would you want to give just a brief rundown of what the Association of Minnesota Counties is and does?
Sure. The Association of Minnesota Counties, which I will refer to as AMC today as we talk, we in local government do tend to use a lot of acronyms, but AMC is the voluntary, nonprofit, nonpartisan membership association of all 87 Minnesota counties. And as such, we do a number of things for our members. We were probably best known for doing policy analysis and representing counties at the state capitol and at the federal level. But we also do a significant amount of research and best practice development and sharing between Minnesota's counties, and training and leadership development for county officials, including elected county commissioners, other elected officials, and county staff. And then we work hard to bring together county folks from across Minnesota so that they can build relationship, learn from each other, learn about their similarities and differences across the state.
That's great. So basically, there's an association for counties, which is hence why you're called the Association of Minnesota Counties. Are all of the counties members?
They are. The association was founded in 1909, so we've been around for quite some time, and all 87 counties have been members for quite a long time. Throughout the history of the organization, there's been some ebb and flow, but for decades now, all 87 counties have been active members.
That's great. That is great. I know in my short tenure here at the center, we've really appreciated working with you and your staff at AMC. They've been so helpful, especially with outreach. I think for me personally, I think that is one of the most important things that you do is outreach with your counties and with the commissioners and the administrators and just getting them the information that you need. How do you go about deciding that outreach and how that takes place?
Yeah, one of our sort of core beliefs is that we serve as the trusted voice of and for Minnesota counties. And so we take very seriously our role in communicating with counties and then also talking about counties to others. And so when it comes to outreach, you know, we spend a lot of time getting to know all of our counties. So that means not only the people who work for the counties, the elected officials and county staff, but really the things that are happening in all of our different counties, whether it's, you know, their primary economic drivers, their primary businesses, the things that we hear from our counties that are important to their residents. And so we work hard across our staff team to make sure that we have a real pulse, a finger on the pulse of our Minnesota counties. And then our whole focus is providing value to them. And so that's watching for trends and themes and providing training or providing resources. But another key thing that we do, I really enjoy, one of my favorite parts of the job, is that I think we serve as a connector, connecting counties to each other where they have things in common, connecting counties to other resources like your organization or others, but really making sure to help people find the resources they need, which may be things we provide, but are very often just other things we know about.
That connection piece, Julie, is something that we just greatly appreciate. You know, being a research organization, our job is to get our research out to decision makers, which is legislators, but not only that, but county commissioners and county staff and city councils. And so we so greatly appreciate you being that connector. And it's been great within the last year since we've been more actively working with AMC. The number of commissioners and county level people signing up for our newsletter and knowing that they're using our research, it has increased greatly. So thank you for that. Really, really appreciate that. So since, you know, obviously we're a rural organization, but AMC is not, you're a statewide organization. So you have both rural and urban counties. How do you work between those rural county needs and urban county needs? Are they the same or not?
I think that there is far more in common than different, but both pieces are really, really important. And so working across all 87 counties, we hear a lot, obviously, in Minnesota about differences between urban and rural places. But I think, I know you know, working for a rural organization, it's so much deeper than that. There are variations from north to south and east to west, urban, suburban, rural. We have population centers throughout the state. And we have, you know, townships within the seven county metro. So there's a lot of diversity to our population across the state. And I think it's important for us to be aware of what we think of as the quilt of Minnesota. And then it's not as simple as, you know, two different sizes. And so I think that we spend a lot of time at AMC focused on both. So obviously, when we're working on policy development or research, we're working to find commonalities and areas where we intersect and where the issues may play out a little different, but they're absolutely issues across all counties. And at the same time, in order for those policy positions or research projects to be really representative, we have to also take into account the differences. And so an example that people are really familiar with counties is when we work in the area of transportation. We know that transportation, financing, resources are important in every county in Minnesota. Really important. Every county spends a significant amount of resource managing their transportation infrastructure. But obviously that looks really different from county to county. And so at kind of the macro level, we find a lot of intersection and a lot of places where we can agree and work together. But in order to really provide a good, nuanced picture of Minnesota, we have to understand the differences. And I think just as importantly, we see it as part of our mission to make sure our members understand and appreciate the differences so that it isn't a matter of being able to just say a whole other swath of the state is different and they're not like us, but instead to really understand what's different and why, and to be able to explain the value of that as though it's your own county. I just really love this part of our work because I think it deepens connections across our state, and it's what makes us a state that produces really good, high quality policy and operations.
I hear quite often about the rural-urban divide. And I cringe when I hear that because there are similarities and there are differences, but I hope that there's not a divide. And I mean, everything is so contentious right now in government, but I just love that you said that because I really think that that's how you make better policy is by understanding others. And it's not that it's a side, it's the urban side or the rural side, it's understanding the whole of Minnesota. So that's, I know, something in our work as well. It's, yes, we focus on rural, but that doesn't mean that urban isn't important either. But our mission and vision statement, you know, focuses on rural. So that's really good to hear. You mentioned transportation. Looking into your crystal ball into 2021, what are you thinking are going to be some of the big hallmark issues outside of COVID? Because we obviously know that. Looking at the next session, and we're going to probably have a lot of new legislators, what are some of those big issues that AMC is anticipating?
Yeah, well, we'll have to talk about COVID at some point, because I think COVID has really upended how we think about everything and how we in counties do our business. We've learned so much. We've done a lot of work to try to really document and memorialize what we've learned, because what comes next is going to be built off of all these changes that we've seen. And so I would say for us, looking at the legislative session, there's a couple things that I'll just sort of connect to COVID and some maybe that are a little separate. So I'll start out by saying we're in the midst of AMC's district meetings right now. And that's where we typically, I would be on the road today. Actually, I'd be in northern Minnesota today if it was a normal time. But we're doing those meetings virtually now. But during these meetings, we actually bring some of the ideas our policy committees have pulled together to our regional districts, and we ask them, what are their top legislative priorities? And then we gather all that information from our 10 different regions and we bring it together for our board. We sift through it, and that's how we pick our legislative priority issues. Now, we have a platform that's, gosh, more than 20 pages long now of policy statements on all kinds of things. But the high priority issues are what come out of this process. So I'm in the middle of it. So I'm going to have to look into my crystal ball a little bit because I don't have the data. But I can say, traditionally, the areas of transportation and human services are always big issue areas for counties because they are the areas where we spend the most money and where we tend to have a lot of state mandates and a lot of state responsibilities. We all know heading into 2021 that the state is facing a really significant budget deficit. And we haven't had to work through a deficit for some years. And so it's going to be a really different environment when we're operating on scarcity and actually having to make cuts and reductions versus growth and expansion. And so for counties, I know, again, based on what we've learned in the pandemic, we've been working on a package of waivers in the human services area that would allow us to do business differently. And a lot of these, frankly, are things that grew out of rural Minnesota's experience pre-COVID on how you deliver those really person-based human services programs when you have to cover a large amount of geography. And so using things like what we call telepresence, but video essentially, to interact with clients rather than having them have to come into a central county courthouse, there's going to be a lot of discussion about how to use technology and use some of those tools with human services. I expect transportation will always be a big issue for counties. We are responsible for a lot of road mile and bridges and transit systems, and they are expensive and in need of upkeep and really important to the economy throughout the state. And so in a year when we're looking at scarcity, I think it's going to be a challenge because we've really supported new investment in transportation for many years. And talking about new investment is really tough when you're actually having to make cuts. So those are a few top line things. The last thing I always have to mention that counties care about is what we call county program aid. That's our general purpose aid that we get from the state. A lot of people are more familiar with local government aid, which is the name of the program for cities. But it is a general aid that comes out to counties on a formula that in the county world serves as direct property tax relief, that it buys down the cost of the county's budget. And so we have seen some rebounds in that program in the last couple of years, but we've never actually gotten the program back to the 2008 levels where we saw cuts in the last Great Recession. And I know that counties will be watching very carefully to hope that we don't lose ground in that particular program area next year.
Very interesting. I'm curious, talking about transportation, you know, we just passed a bonding bill. And obviously that took a little bit of time and there's politics involved, but it got passed. Curious about your thoughts on that, just overall.
The bonding bill is a huge priority for Minnesota counties. It does include some broad funding programs like local roads and bridges, which are general pots of money that flow out across the state, as well as all those very specific programs for cities and counties and communities across the state. That infrastructure package is a really important economic driver in rural Minnesota, and it's something that we always work hard to press the legislature to pass a robust bill, because we know how important it is to all of our members. And so we were just absolutely thrilled that we were finally able to get that bill across the finish line here this fall, after I think a record number of special sessions that we've experienced this year.
Yeah, I know. I live in Waseca County, and I know of some projects, that one in particular in the little town of Waldorf that I'm from, that the $800,000+ will be able to complete their sewer water, stormwater, their whole infrastructure there. So I know people are happy in rural areas. And like you said, the economic development it provides is huge. But yeah, let's talk about COVID and how is that affecting the counties, you know, with the CARES dollars? Where does AMC come into all of that?
COVID has been such a challenge for Minnesota counties. So this pandemic, when it emerged last March, I remember, actually, I was in Washington, D.C. for a national conference right at the beginning of March, right as we were starting to learn about the challenges of COVID. And I remember flying home thinking, actually wondering if I should be wearing a mask on that airplane. There were people on my plane with masks, but it was all new to all of us. So we got home from that conference, and immediately our board started having frequent phone calls to discuss what does this mean for counties and what are we going to do. So dating back to March with COVID, counties rapidly had to change their business. And you saw counties across, particularly in rural areas, very rapidly move their staff to working from home. I think one of the first counties in the state to actually make that move to close their county buildings was Lac Parle County, and rapidly worked to get the technology needed so that they could continue operations, but that everybody would move home. And so during those early weeks, we spent a lot of time working with counties to try to understand the state and federal guidance, help them think through what things they could do remotely, what things they maybe couldn't do remotely. And it was just like drinking out of a fire hose for all of us. But that's very much the role of an association. I talked earlier about outreach and knowing our members and disseminating information. And we felt like we really needed to be a place where members could turn for factual information about best practices and the rules. And so it's funny, I remember in early March saying to our communications staff person, I think we need to do a weekly COVID update, just where we can aggregate what we know about COVID. And literally the day after I said that, we decided it had to be daily. There was so much information coming out. And so from March through midsummer, we did a daily COVID email to our members. All of those are archived on our website, where we just shared what we knew about changing HR rules from the federal government, where we talked about the governor's executive orders and the daily updates from the state health department. And we just worked to make sure there was one key place that people could go to get data that they could trust about operations during COVID. Then, of course, we moved into working with the legislature. I mentioned the human services waivers. There were a number of waivers that we put in place really rapidly And those are the things we're going to work off of to see what we could continue to do different long term. And so it was about that time that we had a conversation internally about really needing to document and understand how county operations were changing. And so our president put together a blue ribbon committee that started meeting in early summer. And we went sort of county department by department, operation by operation, and we brought in experts and just asked them to talk about what has changed. What have you learned? What would you do different if you could? What things are you doing different now that you think we should continue to do long term? And we just asked for all the information we could get. And that committee continued to meet all summer. And they were the place that helped us to vet out waivers we were asking for from the state. They helped us to think through best practices we could share with counties about ideas and operations, things like counties starting to use appointments for county services or using technology that allows people to wait in their cars until it's their turn to come in. Just trying to share that all very broadly. And then we noticed a couple of what we're calling transformational issues that emerged. One of which was brought up by some of our rural commissioners was related to their jail populations and noticing that, you know, as we were trying to manage for the disease spread, the jails, we were able to reduce jail populations quite significantly throughout the state. And really just wanting to dig in and understand that. And is there something we could learn that would last longer than just this emergency period? And so we're going to be putting together a work group with experts from across law enforcement and corrections and the legal system to really look into what did we learn during COVID and how might that influence how we think about who's incarcerated long term. So it was really, this has been a really innovative time in government. It's been a really challenging time. Counties, of course, have public health departments, and public health departments have been on the front line of responding to the pandemic. I see county folks working so hard, and I worry about the pace at which folks have been working now for months. In an emergency, so often, you know, when we think of like natural disaster emergencies, they're intense, but they're acute. They happen, they end, and then there's a recovery. And with this pandemic, it's been like a slow moving marathon emergency. And I think it's been hard for folks to step back and catch their breath, which is why we wanted to do this blue ribbon work right in the midst of it. So we were capturing the ideas while people were still trying them out. And so as challenging and difficult and sad as this pandemic has been in many ways, there has been this silver lining of spurring innovation in government. Innovation can be hard in government. It's hard to make kind of large-scale change rapidly, but we've been forced to do it, and now we can evaluate it and learn from it and decide what we want to hang on to.
I'm really glad that you brought up innovation, but also silver linings. That's something I try to look for every day, even when it's snowing prematurely. But, you know, just thinking really the time that we're in right now, I'm so curious, you know, in decades to come, we'll look back on this, the year of 2020, of when some things radically changed. And I think sometimes it takes a crisis to radically change something, you know, to right the ship. And so it will be interesting when you're talking about jail population, you know, and other issues that you really don't think about, but now, you know, there's got to be better ways or different ways of doing things. Do you foresee that Blue Ribbon Committee extending into the future?
So what we've been talking about with our Blue Ribbon Committee work is a baton handoff to the next phase of work. Because we had this sort of small, intense process with about 20, 25 commissioners who worked really hard. I mean, they met twice a week for 2 to 3 hours at a time for weeks on end to really try to get their arms around all of this information. And we so appreciated that folks were that invested in trying to share good ideas, share bad ideas, and learn from what was happening in real time around them. But that said, as we came into the fall, what we're seeing happen with the work of the committee is this baton handoff kind of into our traditional processes. So what I mean by that is there were a number of things the committee discussed that are going to require policy change at the state or federal level. And so those ideas were feeding into our normal policy development process. We have policy committees, they vet issues, they put them in our platform, make them priorities, we work on them at the Capitol. And so we've taken the policy pieces and handed them off to our committees where we have expertise in each of the content areas. So this group was a real generalist, innovative thinking group. Now we're handing it to the county commissioners who've chosen to specialize in different content areas. That's one piece. A second piece is taking what I think of as the operations issues. So counties, ways of doing business that don't require state legislative change or federal change. We've taken those operations issues and handed those to our research and program development team to start working on either training sessions or toolkits or best practices, one pagers on things like, you know, what are model work from home policies? What should a county consider when deciding whether or not to make some positions work from home permanently? Those are things we don't necessarily need a higher level of government to give us permission to do, but we really want to pull together ideas from various counties and help people to be thoughtful in how they approach them. So those things are going into one of our staff teams at ANC that are working to then get ideas back out to members. And then that third piece that I talked about, the transformational piece, I talked about the jail population group that we're going to be creating to really dig into that issue more deeply, because some of that might be policy, some of it might be best practice. We really need to roll up our sleeves and understand it better, but we need more experts at that table from across, like I said, the Sheriff's Association, our probation system, public defenders. We have another group like that that we're going to be working on related to human services and transforming our human service system in Minnesota, which is a state and local partnership in the delivery of those services. So those transformational groups, we want to take a little more time. They're really research groups in a way, with groups of our members at the table that are more expert or who've spent more time in the content area. And I, you know, some of them, we may start to see some initial ideas out of those groups in the next couple months, but they may take longer for us to get results from. So we have, I will say, we have promised the Blue Ribbon Committee that someday when we are in a place where we can get people back together in rooms, that we'd really love to bring them together face-to-face once so that they can celebrate their work and get to know each other in person, because for many of these commissioners, this is the first time they've worked together and they did it all virtually.
Wow, that's amazing and fantastic. And I really don't think the average Minnesotan realizes how hard county commissioners work and county staff. I mean, I was just in getting my license tabs yesterday in Waseca, and you know what? It was quick and painless, just like normal. And I'm so appreciative of everything they've done, because I know it has been really, really difficult. And so, gosh, kudos to the commissioners for coming in and the staff as well. I want to touch on people moving to rural areas. You know, thinking about, you know, depending upon if work from home is a permanent thing, you know, and maybe people will start moving to rural areas more. What kind of advice would you have? You know, I think of, I guess I was talking, I've been talking to some young people who have moved out to rural areas after living in the Twin Cities or in other cities for decades, and they want to get involved and they're hesitant. because they're like, I haven't been around for a long time. You know, for these people that might be moving into rural areas, I don't know if they have experience or not in rural, but what kind of advice would you have for them to get involved in their community?
Yeah, what an awesome question. So, I mean, I have a couple thoughts on this, Julie. So I have to start out by saying, I think you know this, but I consider myself to be a rural girl at heart. I grew up all across the Midwest, actually, in small towns. I consider my home to be South Dakota because I lived in Brookings, South Dakota from sixth grade through high school graduation. That was the place that I consider my hometown. But when I was in college, my parents moved to Hutchinson, Minnesota, and I went to college at the University of Minnesota Morris, which, you know, Minnesota Morris has done a ton of work on the exciting rural redevelopment. And so, I mean, I love traveling our state and getting out into rural areas of the state because that feels comfortable and like home to me. Even though I, like a lot of people, I've lived now in the Twin Cities for a good chunk of my adult life. So I'd say a couple things. One is, you're right. I mean, we're seeing the data that as people can work from home, a lot of folks have been, you know, you hear the stories of people going and working at their cabins, of course, folks who are lucky enough to have those second homes and were able to spend the summer enjoying them. But there are lots of folks who are getting to work from home maybe for the first time. That's true for me. My spouse has always worked 100% from home, and he tells me all the time that he could work from anywhere and that, that he often talks about other places that he would love to spend time working. He's from a very small town in Wisconsin. And so it can be hard. I can say this as a small town girl. It can be hard when you're the new kid in town. It can take some time to develop relationships, particularly in communities where a lot of people have lived there a long time. But rural revitalization is something that people are really excited about. And I've found that people love welcoming families into their communities and celebrate having kids in the school system and new folks volunteering in volunteer opportunities. So to your question, I always recommend building relationships with people starting where they're at. And so getting involved through church or through volunteer opportunities, if you have kids in the school, getting involved in the parent groups. If you don't have kids in the school, you mentioned if you're a younger person looking to relocate and you're not at that point in life yet, looking for volunteer opportunities is something that exists in every community. It could be at the local library. It could be with a local watershed district. There's all kinds of opportunities that you can find that connect with things you care about and will help put you in touch with people who also care about those things. The other thing that we see in rural Minnesota is that there are lots of open positions. So it's both about being able to maybe take the job with you that you have. But one of our initiatives at AMC for many years now has been really promoting county government careers. And there are lots of jobs in a county seat in particular that they need well-qualified folks to come and do all across county business areas, whether it's, you know, environmental programs, human services programs, public health, transportation engineers. There's just a wide, wide range of jobs available. And they are looking to bring folks from outside of their communities in to fill those positions. So I just think there's lots of opportunities. And it's a wonderful, there are so many wonderful rural communities in Minnesota where you can enjoy a whole host of different things than you might be familiar with in the Twin Cities. I just highly encourage people to check it out.
So rounding out our podcast here, Julie, you know, you talked about being raised in rural America like myself, and you talked about getting involved in county government and maybe working for county government. One question I like to ask our guests on this podcast is, how did you get to be where you are now? And what really intrigued you about county government or about policy? And where did you go to school? Like what intrigued you? Because I think there's so many kids nowadays, they would never think of, I want to work for the county, you know, but tell us about that.
Yeah. So I consider my whole life and career to be a series of happy accidents that I'm just so, so grateful for opportunities that have landed in my lap that I maybe wouldn't have expected. So I grew up all across the Midwest. My dad worked for 3M and he worked at manufacturing plant sites. And so my parents were from White Bear Lake. They were from the Twin Cities area. And when they were young and I was a baby, they left. And ventured off to a small town, very small town in Oklahoma, where they were opening a new 3M plant. And that really opened up a ton of opportunities for our family. My dad had been a shift worker at 3M, and by going and helping to open this new plant, he had an opportunity to become a supervisor. And so long story short, we moved when I was a kid from small towns in Oklahoma, Nebraska, and South Dakota. And being someone who had to move a number of times as a kid was really, really shaped who I am today. In that I was actually a kind of a shy kid, but I had to learn how to make friends. I had to learn how to move into a small town where when you walked into the classroom, you were a huge novelty, but also an outsider. And so I think about that a lot as I've aged and how that has influenced my career. I went to the University of Minnesota Morris, which again was a happy accident. I'll admit, growing up in South Dakota, I wanted to go off to a big city. I swore I'd never go to college in a town smaller than the town I grew up in. But I loved the University of Minnesota Morris, and something about it spoke to me. And I did my 4 years of school there. And I was kind of a typical liberal arts student, and actually graduated from college with majors in international relations and international economic development. And then I needed to find a job. And at the time in the early 90s, jobs were not super plentiful. And I ended up getting a job as a grant writer for an organization in South Dakota called the First District Association of Local Governments, which essentially is like a rural development district in South Dakota for 10 counties. And that was my first exposure to counties. I worked for 10 counties doing grant writing and economic development plans. And I did that job for a while, and then was ready for that new challenge. And I was on a grant-funded position that I was concerned about as a young person on the stability of the funding. And so I started looking for a job that had something to do with grants. And I ended up getting a job with the State Health Department in Minnesota. Totally unexpected. I didn't have a background in public health. But it was a grant management type job. Well, I know this is getting to be a long story, but I'll say that I worked at the State Health Department for 10 years, worked through a number of policy jobs, and ended up in their essentially local government relations area. And I was working on providing grants to county health departments in Minnesota. And the part of the job I loved the best was getting to travel around the state, go out to meet with county public health directors, learn about what was important in their communities, try to support that back at the state level. And so a job opened up at the Association of Minnesota Counties, working with our local public health directors. And I had been at the state for 10 years and was very comfortable and decided this is either my opportunity to do something different or to decide that I really want to work, you know, for the state for my career. And I decided to take the leap, and it was just the best possible choice I could have made. I love working for AMC. So all of a sudden, they got to work for the local public health directors, not for the state working with them, but really for them, and had the power to help them try to influence their own circumstance. And so I worked in that job for a number of years, then moved into our health and human services policy analyst job. And then 7 years ago, when our executive director was retiring, decided to apply to be the executive director. And AMC had never hired an executive director from inside the organization. They had always hired from outside. And so I knew it was a little bit of a stretch, but I really felt like I was excited about the opportunity to think strategically about how this organization serves counties, how we build relationships across all counties, and to really widen our scope to think about the fact that building relationships is foundational to public policy, and that the idea that we can bring people together, and through just the power of people having conversation and getting to know each other and recognizing their shared values, we could move policy forward. To me, that just felt like the best possible fit for me. And so I was really honored when the board chose me 7 years ago to start as the executive director. And I love every single day. I don't have any day that looks the same. The challenges that face counties change, which means the challenges that face us change. And I'm excited every day. I used to say I was excited every day to go to the office, but now I'm excited every day to turn on my laptop and come into my home office and get to work on behalf of our members.
Oh, gosh. Thank you for sharing that. I like to ask that just because you never know where your career is going to take you. And again, happy accidents. I mean, that's just...
I still am interested in foreign policy, but going from focusing on international relations to working in counties, I talk all the time about the fact that in the end, so much of the work we do is really about helping bring together people across difference. And at the time, I was really interested in Middle East policy and these really intractable national problems. And the bottom line is we have challenges and opportunities at every level of government. And I really like the fact that I have, by happenstance and now by choice, ended up working in the level of government that really has an impact on people's day-to-day life. I never would have guessed that this sort of career existed. And I love talking to students about the fact that local government is where stuff gets done. It's, I think, the most exciting level of government where you can actually see change happen. You can do work on something for a period of time and then see the fruit of that labor because it's so close to you. So yes, I'm an evangelist on behalf of local government.
Isn't that the truth? Gosh, I think of the elections here, and I mean, obviously, the election for president and everything is important, but I say to people, I'm like, you really need to pay attention at that local level. That is where the change happens, and that's where the policies affect you every single day. So, gosh, I'm glad you brought that up. And gosh, from one relationship builder to another, thank you for being on our podcast. I look forward to a day that we can get together for coffee sometime. I don't know when, but in person sometime, whether it's inside or outside, but I hope that you'll come back with us during session and talk more about some policy issues that are coming up.
Thanks so much for chatting with me today.
Awesome. Thank you so much to Julie Ring, the Executive Director of the Association of Minnesota Counties.
You've been listening to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere.